Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
Welcome to Through the Smoke on Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. This week I've got as a guest Fire Chief Dennis Rubin, Washington, D.C., Fire and EMS. We'll be talking with Dennis in just a few seconds. But first, I want to share some thoughts with you. By the way, this week's show is brought to you by First Responder Financial. Of course, the CEO is Dennis Smith of Firehouse and Engine Company 82 fame. Check out the link below to First Responder Financial. And a reminder, next week we'll be in Baltimore at Firehouse Expo. We're doing a live broadcast of Through the Smoke. If you'd like to join us, we'd love to have you. It's Thursday at 1400 hours. That's Thursday at 2 p.m., room 308 at the Convention Center. Again, at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, a live broadcast of Through the Smoke, in which you are welcome to join us. I've got guests planned for that show, including Dr. Dennis O'Neill, the superintendent of the National Fire Academy, and a longtime Jersey City firefighter. I know you'll enjoy meeting and talking with him. If you can join us for the show. If not, you'll certainly be able to listen in here on firehouse.com. And I've also got Mike Smith, retired deputy fire chief from the D.C. Fire Department as well, talking about building construction, but in a different way maybe than perhaps we're used to. Before we go forward with today's show and have Chief Dennis Rubin join us, I want to talk to you about firefighter staffing for just a minute. Like many of you, I've spending a little time off with my family, and matter of fact, right now I'm on vacation. We're having a good time. Me and the gang before we head to Baltimore for Firehouse Expo. But when I got some information, I just needed to share this with you. I guess you saw last week's news where Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff has a gut feeling that our country may get attacked again. People need to pay attention to that. If he has a gut feeling, he probably has one of the more informed guts in our nation. I don't know about you, but I think my kids, my family, and my friends, I think about them when the terror threats come to mind. I think most people do. So if the Secretary's gut is bothering him, so is mine. Sadly, since 9/11, we've seen loads of funding for some projects and cuts in others. So some areas are getting funded, other areas are being cut. And you know, it just makes me shake when I see things such as at the local level. Up in Boston, did you know that last week in Massachusetts, Governor Deval, I'm not sure how he pronounces the name, Governor Patrick in Massachusetts vetoed $2.3 million earmarked for the Boston Fire Department training and hazmat programs? Yeah, that's probably a really good idea there, Governor. Why would any bad guys want to target a historic, very American city with over 500,000 people and millions of visitors? Incredible. Maybe he vetoed it because he does think the firefighters have enough funding and they don't need any more. Yeah, that's probably what it is. Oh, okay. And at the federal level, for example, you can get your personnel trained in all the NIMS programs, 100, 200, 300, 400, and so on, but that does not mean your fire department will be any better at handling, for example, a dwelling fire. Yeah, there's a department not far from where I live that put all their employees through all kinds of great training, such as the NIMS programs, but yet they're still missing some of the basics, like good leadership in the organization. And, you know, if you need tactical local use daily training, such as flashover training, that may be challenging. You may not have the funding for that. So, yet on one hand, we're getting NIMS training, and it's being funded by millions and millions of dollars. But yet when firefighters need basic flashover training, basic company officer training, it's almost impossible to get in some areas. If you want to increase or maintain staffing, that also may make your gut ache. Staffing issue. After all, if a department cannot respond with adequate staffing to a single-family dwelling fire, how can they be expected to respond adequately to the terrorist incidents? What some folks in our business do not seem to understand or don't want to understand is that no matter what you do, if you respond to house fires, for example, it takes well-led and coordinated firefighter staffing performing specific tasks to quickly and effectively control the fire. From the hydrant to the pump panel to the hose lines to the venting to the searching to the rescuing to the leadership and all the many tasks required, if the right number of well-trained firefighters required for the task don't arrive quickly with good bosses led in a coordinated effort, it usually won't work. Generally, if you have more well-trained, well-led, and arriving on a timely basis firefighters, you have a greatly increased chance of putting that fire out quicker. Not always, but almost always. If someone is trapped in that house fire and you arrive with less personnel, you have a calculated, measurable, and provable less chance to save the trapped people than if you had the required staffing. It's called customer service. As cities across America plaster slogans like commitment to excellence or committed to service excellence or at your service, the best in customer service, and related slogans on their buildings and vehicles, I always wonder what is behind those words. You know, I love slogans. Fire departments have some of the best slogans out there. And here are some specific slogans that some cities had. Just the cities, not their fire departments. For example, Atlantic City, New Jersey, America's favorite playground. Cleveland, we'll rock you. Dallas, live large, think big. Houston, the real Texas. Chattanooga, Tennessee, the attraction's only natural. Rochester, Minnesota, rah, rah, Rochester. Seattle, the city of flowers. Montreal, the more you kiss, the Frencher it gets. Ooh, we love that one. Trenton, New Jersey, Trent makes, the world takes. Tacoma, Washington, America's number one wired city. And Omaha, Nebraska, oh. Slogans should reflect something, and if you're lucky, it is something real that really reflects how that city operates, and it's bought into and actually done by those who work in that organization. If a slogan says commitment to excellence, that should be the standard, or somebody's standard. The water should be excellent, the park should be excellent, the elected officials should be excellent, and the cop should be excellent at giving you a break if you get a ticket. Simple stuff. When I saw this piece that I'm talking about right now, and I saw Omaha's slogan, I think it fit perfectly based upon a fire department study they just had done. When I read the study, I said to myself, oh no. A consultant's report recommends reducing the number of firefighters staffing the Omaha Fire Department from 4 to 3 on their apparatus. The report said that the fire department is overloaded, and essentially the report says that the Omaha Fire Department doesn't have to be as good as they are if the city wants to save money. The Omaha Fire Department doesn't have to be as good as they are if the city wants to save money. You've got to be kidding me. Richard Brady, president of California-based Matrix Consulting, said that the city could save $5.1 million annually by reducing the Omaha Fire Department by 105 firefighters, among other minor changes. That would be about 15% of their budget, which they're budgeted to have 661 firefighters. The report claims that those cuts would not harm the ability of the department to respond to calls. What? The report claims that those cuts would not harm the ability of the fire department to respond to calls? They claim the fire department could save $5 million a year by reducing the number of firefighters from 4 to 3 on each pump or ladder company, among other changes? A total of 105 firefighter jobs could be eliminated? And another $700,000 could be saved by reducing the Captain Heavy Fire Department? I don't understand it. The study concluded that the Omaha... Oh, wait, here, this will help you. This will help you understand it. The study concluded that the Omaha Fire Department is performing far above... The Omaha Fire Department is performing far above national standards and thus can reduce the number of firefighters assigned each apparatus. That sort of reminds me when I was a kid. My dad wanted me to get A's. I wish he'd say, you know, you don't have to get an A, son. Just pass. Just get a D plus and you'll be okay, which, of course, is what I did. The study concluded that they're performing above national standards, and they can reduce it if they want to just become average. Dropping from 4 firefighters to 3 firefighters would not create staffing or response problems, said the Matrix study. Nationally, fire departments should be able to get 15 firefighters to a fire within 8 minutes 90% of the time. And Omaha meets that standard 97% of the time. So then they can cut that back. Wouldn't you think the citizens of Omaha have a gut feeling that is a good thing? Here we go with that gut feeling thing again. Wouldn't somebody running for election want to use this as a positive thing? Shouldn't citizens wonder about response, staffing, and the relationship to timing, performance, and service delivery? I mean, they can say it wouldn't hurt their response. I mean, they could show up in a Hyundai painted red with a red light on the roof, and the fire department has arrived to some extent. Is the money saving per citizen all that much? Where they would be willing to actually reduce the level of service when they call 911 after little Irving plays with matches, sets the bedroom on fire, and is trapped? In other words, do you really think the public would like to save a few pennies, because that's really what it comes down to daily for each individual taxpayer, to reduce their ability to receive fire and emergency service? It is a fact that additional firefighters can make a difference, a real measurable customer service difference, when the critical services a department provides are urgently needed. And while terrorist-related homeland security response services, which is basically another term for a fire department, is vital at the local first responder level, how can a community expect that to happen when the staffing to handle the day-to-day services are recommended to be cut? If the department is doing great and meeting or exceeding goals, do you think the public wants that cut? Is the public aware of the cuts? Is the public willing to accept the cuts? It's their fire department. Sometimes they are willing to accept cuts until they have a fire. And then all the standard, oh my gosh, it was horrible, what are we going to do questions come out. Elected people are elected to look out for the public good and to provide the best possible public safety response when we're having a horrible day. But, of course, that's just my gut feeling. Some consultants will say anything they're asked to. Of course, it depends what questions consultants are asked to answer by those who bring them in and pay them. Some provide information based upon the fact that budgets are tight. Some provide information based upon the fact that there are labor management issues. And some provide facts without any prejudice or being told how the report should play out. Saving taxpayers' money is a big deal, and running a department with a fair deal to the firefighter is, as well as the citizens paying the taxes, that's a big deal too. And when money is being wasted, that too is a big deal. But when a fire department is successfully delivering service, excellent service, 97% of the time, why cut it without first making sure that it is what the citizens of the community are willing to accept? After all, it's the citizens who are supposed to matter, the customers who expect the service. Damn it, it's their fire department. When a consultant claims that staffing cuts would not harm the ability of a fire department to provide service, in this case, my gut feeling is that they shouldn't be very hard for the OFD, the Omaha firefighters, to convince their community differently. It just depends whose house is on fire and who is in that house as to mattering or not. Just ask them. Ask those impacted by service cuts if the city decides to do what this report recommends. Talk to the taxpayers, even talk to the elected folks. What do they want responding to their or to their loved ones when they have their once-in-a-lifetime emergency? Oh, Omaha. You're listening to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. This week's show is brought to you by First Responder Financial. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Chief Dennis Rubin of the Washington, D.C. Fire and EMS Department.
Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card, it's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
This is Radio at Firehouse.com. You're listening to Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. Very special guest this week, an old friend of mine. I've probably known each other probably a good 20-some years or so, and had an opportunity to teach together and just kind of compare notes as we go through life on similar but different tracks is Dennis Rubin, the new fire chief, or his actual title is Chief of Fire and Emergency Medical Services. I'll read you a little bit about his bio. Dennis L. Rubin is the Chief of Fire and Emergency Medical Service for the District of Columbia, meaning Washington, D.C. Dennis was named by Mayor Fenty's, or as Mayor Fenty's top choice to head the agency in March of this year. Dennis is now responsible for the management and supervision of over 2,000 employees and an operating budget that exceeds $170 million. The resident population of Washington, D.C. is 600,000, but the influx of federal workers and tourists and everybody else visiting Washington, D.C. on a regular basis during the day is about 1.5 million people. The agency is the nation's first responder, responsible for safeguarding the Capitol, the White House, and other precious landmarks, schools, businesses, and homes. It's quite a challenge. Prior to Dennis's nomination, he was fire chief of Atlanta Fire Rescue, which had 1,100 employees and an operating budget of $88 million. And let's see, Dennis's experience in fire and emergency services spans more than 35 years. He's been a line firefighter, a company officer, and command-level officer in several major departments, including Washington, D.C., at Norfolk, Virginia. In 94, he was president of the State Fire Chiefs Association of Virginia. He hosted the 99 Southeastern Fire Chiefs Conference in Dothan. He serves on several committees. He's very active in the Safety, Health, and Survival section of the IFC. He was the Safety and Health Chair for 2 years. My goodness, Dennis, I guess I could just keep going, but how about if I just welcome you to the show?
Thank you, Fire Chief. What an honor and pleasure it is. I've been watching the growth of Through the Smoke and the tremendous work you're doing for the American Fire and Rescue Service. And let me open up by saying thanks for all you do, Billy.
Oh, it's a pleasure. This is one of my most favorite things that I do here. As I said, I could go through Dennis's bio, his certifications, his degrees, his credentials. He was a field fire instructor for MFRE. Worked out in Arizona, down in Atlanta, is a contributing editor for Firehouse Magazine, wrote a book, Rube's Rules for Survival. If you've never read that book, it's an easy read, it's a quick read. I call it it's really designed to be a perfect firefighter's book. Short paragraphs, and it's a fast read. All that's missing is lots of pictures, and we do real well with a book like that. It is available through Penwell, if you're interested in purchasing that book. Dennis has written hundreds of technical articles and on and on and on. Dennis is a dad, three kids, Dennis, Andrea, and Ashley, and a grandson, Luke. Well, let's talk about, you're back home, sort of. Talk about your history with the Washington, D.C. Fire Department.
Chief, it's not sort of. This is my hometown. I was born and raised here. Had a chance to work at Engine 10 for almost 6 years and drove the 7th Battalion Fire Chief, and I'm saddened to say it no longer exists. We've blended from 8 Battalion Chief somehow down to 6. But for me, this has been a lifelong goal to be in command of this fire department, to get an opportunity to give back something to the community that has given me so much. And boy, the administration, Mayor Fenty and his entire staff, are just so pro-safety and security. It's truly the highlight of my life, and certainly what a wonderful, wonderful blessing it is to be back in DCFD.
It's it's a big turnaround, with due respect to past administrations, but it's been my impression that the D.C. Fire and EMS has not necessarily been past administration's top priority through funding, through support, and it sounds like your opportunity, personal opportunity for being back in the department you started with, and now your opportunity to be at the head of the ship to make some changes, it sounds like the timing is perfect.
You know, it really truly is. We've suffered through a lot of situations. Some we've had control over, some well beyond the fire rescue department's control. But all in all, I think the stage is set. For the first time in probably 30 or 40 years, the city has a reasonable surplus. Long-term economic health, and I know the folks listening in are probably gagging right now, but it's also a fire chief's important duty to make sure that we stay financially as healthy as well as finance and every other department, but our long-term financial health looks great. I think the opportunity exists for us to become the 51st state. I really believe that's in the cards, maybe not this year, but certainly within the next couple of years, and you know, I'll just say it again, Mayor Finty has brought a breath of fresh air to this city where average is not going to be tolerated, and the expectation is each and every department will meet and exceed their goals and simply wow their customers.
Well, getting focused on needs, you know, the D.C. Fire Department, this is not meant as specific to the members, because I know a lot of D.C. firefighters and paramedics, and they're good people, and they're hardworking just like any other firefighter in this country, but being forgotten so long can develop cultural issues, can develop attitudinal issues. It really wasn't the happiest place to work, and then with the fire load down, it really just made it for a tough place to be. But you know, I also in the same breath know, as I said, a bunch of the guys and gals who work there, and I've asked over the last couple months, and it's fairly positive. How's he doing? Well, we'll see. Looks okay so far. I mean, one firefighter says, if he lets us wear shorts, we're going to be the happiest department in the world. So it's funny how everybody's priorities are different. What's with the shorts issue?
Well, I think we've always been perhaps the best-dressed fire department on the East Coast, and a lot of attention to detail and a lot of, I guess, probably negative reinforcement has been issued relative to the uniform side of things. In other words, you wear your collar pins this way or that way, and I think what we're going to focus on is service to the customer, making certain that our members stay safe, and that we survive the day and do the right thing by the folks that need help. The other things will fall into place. In other words, shorts are coming to the members. In fact, I think we're going to have our first smoke detector blitz this weekend on June 21st, July 21st, let me get my months right. And I'm going to be fashioning the very first pair of officially worn shorts in the department, and you know, at 100 degrees and 100% humidity, to provide some relief in that way is just important. So at least we'll have one member on our side. But we're trying to have an administration that's fair and open and honest and equitable. The four assistant fire chiefs that are in place are just absolutely outstanding. I would put the senior administration of this fire department up against any in the world, not just the country. They're absolutely outstanding, and I think we're better than a diamond in the rough. I think we're going to be the best-kept secret for a little while longer, but with your help and many others and Firehouse Magazine and, of course, .com, I think we'll get the message out about how great a city it is.
Did you know some of the senior staff chiefs prior to taking the job?
You know, just briefly, what I found, there's about three or four people left on this fire department that were here when I left in 1979. They're all old guys, chief, you know, and
right.
Billy, probably about a dozen folks have popped in, and we've talked about myself working with their dad. My first captain, Captain Palmer, who retired as a deputy chief, I had a chance to promote his son, Gary Palmer Jr., to deputy fire chief over fire prevention, so that's been pretty cool. And I guess to really place it in perspective, I had one firefighter at a major fire when the fire was out stop up and shake hands and said, you know, do you know such and such? And of course I did, and we chatted for a minute. Then it dawned on me, is that your dad? And he paused, and he said, no, sir. And I said, oh, are you related? He said, that's my granddad.
So, oh, man, we'll keep that Grecian formula out.
Yeah, it benchmarks where you're at in life. And you know, at a a very young 55 years old. And
that's right. That's what I said, very young 52. Yeah, Let's talk about probably the one issue that's been making headlines across the nation. It started with the treatment of a patient by DC EMS, and it really spiraled into quite an issue to the point where certain members of the community and political arena in D.C. were calling for breaking EMS away from the Washington, D.C. Fire Department and creating an a third service. My opinion should not be curious. It's obvious, as far as I'm concerned, the EMS belongs to the fire service, and that's where it needs to stay. But I know you were challenged literally the day you started with this issue. Can you kind of give a little background on the specifics of the issue as much as you can share with our listeners, and then maybe give an idea what's going on now?
Yes, sir. About 18 months ago, one of the Rosenbaum family members, Mr. David Rosenbaum, was attacked in Washington, D.C., and assailed by two gentlemen that were wielding a lead pipe, and they caused major head trauma. Unfortunately, through a series of very catastrophic events on our part, we misdiagnosed and perhaps mistreated and certainly delayed some care. When Mr. Rosenbaum was taken to the hospital, he was prioritized as being in an alcoholic stupor, i.e. drunk, and was put at the low priority, if you will, of the hospital process. And about 4 or 5 hours later, it was learned that he had major head trauma and then ultimately succumbed to those injuries. And when it came out, there were some factors involved that just were not pleasant for the department. Transportation was made to the facility that was close to one of the paramedics' either grandmother or banking. I'm not sure, but it was more of a personal convenience than it had anything to do with patient care. And, of course, the initial misdiagnosis and completely failing to take steps to treat the head injury caused a storm, and it should have. I think, though, in the long run, what has occurred is a mayoral task force has been established. I've had a chance, and literally my first day I met the Rosenbaum family, second day I began chairing this task force, and we're about halfway through our work. And we're looking at some truly sweeping changes. I think you're going to see the supervision of EMS go up dramatically, where there's a lot more field supervisors, a lot higher rank, and a lot higher profile. Quality assurance, quality control, where we're watching every aspect of the process from a technical clinical standpoint, I think you're going to see that, along with training and other resources. In the meantime, in the past 18 months, the fire department has added, I think it's either 15 or 16 now, paramedic engine companies, and we've also added several medic ambulances and regular basic life support ambulances, to where we're pretty much assured we're going to get first response on location in 4 minutes, paramedic care in the 8-minute window, and transportation within 13.
Let me just divert you for 1 second. Let's talk about the paramedic engine companies, and we'll get back to this specific issue. That was quite a change for the department, and of course that happened before you. Why is that so difficult? I still don't get it. I mean, I've been running calls since 1973, and I've always wanted to run calls and assist and, you know, whatever I need to do, whether it was an EMT level or whatever. But why are we still fighting this?
I don't think that we are. At least that's my perception. I think the issue was the voluminous amount of calls. I think my beloved Engine 10.
Engine 10, sure.
And I love every company out in the city, for the record. I do. I really do. They are somewhere close to about 7,000 calls. And, you know, the word that would be used here is abuse, and I'm trying to change that, soften it a little, to misuse. The next big hurdle, if you will, the next horizon, the next frontier, is we've got to develop a way of preventing a paramedic engine company with two capable functional paramedics and two other firefighters and a medic ambulance with two outstanding paramedics on board to not go to the person that needs to have stitches removed,
sure,
or needs to get to the hospital to have a prescription filled or other total non-emergency type operations. I think what's going to happen is we're looking at having six customer service units, one in each battalion. It's going to look like a pickup truck with a couple of folks on board. I think we're going to be doing stuff with vouchers for taxi cabs. I think we're actually even looking at the potential of inside or on at least the grounds of one of our southeast fire stations to develop what we're going to call a neighborhood clinic. So we're going to take a complete different approach, if you will, of trying to sift through, and maybe the 7,000 calls will become 4,000. And I think when folks go on a true shooting or otherwise a level one or Delta call, as it would be in the Clausen system, Billy, I think they're ready to whip and ride. I think at 3 o'clock in the morning, when the person has had a toothache, there's a little consternation there, and I think that's universally held throughout the country.
In other words, I'm glad to make a run, but let's make it where my services are truly needed instead of wasting time.
And not engage at all. And, you know, another serious problem that we're confronted with is what we describe as hospital drop times, where we show up with a patient, the patient needs to be admitted to the emergency room, and we have recorded 5 and 6 hour waits. And again, I can't imagine any firefighter out there listening to this incredible, informative show that would say, you know, give it to me, let me stand around in an emergency room and be uncomfortable and not even have a place to grab a drink, if you will, you know, no Coca-Cola or water or anything, or TV to entertain me, and let me just stand here and wait for a hospital bed to become available. So there's a lot of ills, and some the fire department have created, other ones we're going to be solving, but we really don't have ownership, although we're taking ownership.
That's great. So let's go back to the case you were talking about.
I think what will ultimately happen is we will get through the entire process, if you will, of this Blue Ribbon panel, the mayor's task force. I think the recommendations will come forth relatively soon, I think by September. And I think we've honed down or refined down either it's going to be fire service-based EMS with some true refinements and embellishments, such as what I've described, the supervision as well as training embellishments and quality assurance, quality control, and some sort of community support, or it will become a third service that'll have the same set of conditions. But I think we're pretty close to making some decisions. And again, I think the mayor wants what's absolutely the best for our city. On a regular basis, he reminds me that we have a commitment to stay safe and secure, and I think we're going to reach that. And I think instead of people shunning us or saying, wow, that's the way not to run a system, I'm hoping that we become the new Phoenix, and I think that people will look towards D.C. to figure out what we're doing.
That's
one
great.
Really interesting component is in our four busiest hospitals, there will be a physician's assistant that wears the same uniform and patch that I do. In other words, works for our department. They will treat in the hallways of an emergency room up to 5 patients. So in other words, they'll have an area set aside, which we're finishing the MOU now. They'll have 5 hospital cots available. They'll have all the appropriate equipment and various drugs and other needs to maintain those patients. So when a firefighter shows up and there's no bed available, or a paramedic shows up and there's no bed available, we will transfer that patient care to our physician assistant in the hospital, working for us, waiting for patient bed to come open, and then they'll go back in service and move to the next emergency call.
Well, that's a great idea, and I'll tell you, PAs definitely have a role in this, and that's a neat idea. And the fact that they're going to be in uniform is just another opportunity to market the fire department as well.
I think when we the next phase to that will be the neighborhood clinic at a fire station, and again, I think you're going to see the physician's assistant play a role, and that'll be connected directly to neighborhood clinics, formal neighborhood clinics. So perhaps maybe the customer service unit in the 3rd Battalion will come and pick up someone from the fire station clinic and take them to the next, if you will, dock in the box, and see if we can't cut out some of the emergency responses that way.
Cool. Now, let me just jump back on the customer service units. I know in Atlanta, you had customer service units that were actually dispatched on all working fires, if I'm not mistaken, things like that?
Absolutely.
What is that? What's the role of a customer service unit? Who's in it, and what do they do?
Well, in Atlanta, we had one unit, and we were able to staff it with one person 24/7. And the whole idea is that that individual arrives and we begin focusing the efforts of the department towards the customer. In other words, the hose lines still get placed, the ladders still get thrown, the medical supplies still get used. We change nothing in that regard. But now we have one single individual that can focus, if you will, as to what are the family's needs. The customer service units here, Billy, got started kind of vicariously. It was pretty important for us to get out there and started testing fire hydrants. I'm certain you saw that little bit of controversy.
Right. How many of your hydrants were not working in the city then?
We're about 10 to 14% still, but the water department is just starting to make great strides. We have built a true partnership at this point, I think. I'm really pleased to say that they're working diligently. But each battalion ends up with a pickup truck, an officer. I think it's going to permanently be sergeants, but right now it's a sergeant or a lieutenant and a firefighter. And, of course, what they're doing with that system currently is they're out testing hydrants. Well, we're going to test hydrants twice a year. That's going to be part of it. But the other times, of course, the customer service units are going to respond to incidents and start that same process in our community where we're directly connected with the customer, never forgetting that there's flesh and blood, if you will, behind that room and contents or behind the roof on fire or food on the stove or that heart attack call. And I think we're going to take customer service to a whole new level.
So the incident commander who, in whether it be in D.C. or anyone else, who's already stressed to their limits trying to deal with the emergency, here's the family we really have no choice but to put them off to the side while we're dealing with their emergency. Now this customer service unit will respond and be the link between the IC, the family, and whoever else may need to be contacted, that kind of a relationship.
Exactly. And I think there'll be other opportunities that we haven't even explored, such as the non-emergency transportation. A lot of times in our community, folks simply don't have the ability to have cab fare or public transportation funds, so they end up calling an ambulance, which at about $600 a pop is perhaps the most expensive of public transportation. And I think we can put them in a pickup truck and conduct our routine business and get them to wherever they need to go. So we've had Chief Brunicini in a couple of times. He spent time with the executive staff. I think everybody is fired up, and boy, we've got this pretty clear vision that Chief Brunicini has helped us with. And I think kind of watch us. Give us a couple of months. I hope we get a chance to come back on Through the Smoke and report in what we found.
Well, that's great. It sounds like some good stuff ahead. The folks on the customer service units, are you using members of the force who are volunteering to do that as an assignment? If I'm on the job and I'm light duty, am I be assigned to customer service unit? How's that working?
Well, we haven't explored the light duty. At this point, we're hoping by next budget that the coordination position, if you will, the senior member, becomes sarges. And what our vision is that'll be a great opportunity to get promoted to sarge, learn the city, a whole different angle of how we operate, but also stay on shift. So I think everybody's excited about that. Right now, we're filling it with some overtime positions for the firefighters position, but ultimately, we've got about 240 vacancies. So we're going to continue to hire and staff up appropriately, but the need for the firefighters position is probably, again, going to look like the Phoenix red shirt process.
Right.
To where the sarge will work with a person that is waiting to go off to recruit school. And I think we're going to have a ready supply. So we've got a brand new promoted person who wants to prove themselves and do a great job for the community. And we've got a person waiting to go off. And I'm sure you can think back to when you first got started, I believe, down in Florida, and how juiced you were and ready to go and can't wait to become part of the fire department. So I think we're going to have the best of all worlds. And they'll have an orientation to our organization, if you will, through the eyes of the customer. So we're really excited.
Now, for those of you listening who are not familiar with the position sergeant, it's the first level supervisor. It's like a junior company officer. Is that a fair way to describe it, Dennis?
Absolutely, and pretty much the sarge every day bounces from assignment to assignment. Every company has either a lieutenant or a captain in that role, and instead of having perhaps like New York City has covering lieutenants, what we have is a formal rank of sergeant. They have a white helmet. They're the first level officer, like you mentioned. But most sergeants are packing their lunch and on the road virtually every tour.
Okay, great. Well, you're listening to Through the Smoke. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. Our guest this week is Chief Dennis Rubin, the new fire chief of Washington, D.C., Fire and EMS. We'll be right back. By the way, our host, again, is First Responder Financial. For more on First Responder Financial, click the link below. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card, it's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
We're back. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. You're listening to Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're being brought, or this show's being brought to you by First Responder Financial. CEO of First Responder Financial, Dennis Smith, longtime firefighter, and the founder of Firehouse. Check on the link below to find out about some incredible services that First Responder Financial offers. I personally use their credit card, and the payback I'm getting from the credit card, the points I'm getting. I mean, if you're going to carry a credit card, why wouldn't you carry a credit card that gives you stuff back and one that identifies you as a member of the Fire and Rescue and Emergency Service community? So check it out, First Responder Financial. We're back talking with Fire Chief Dennis Rubin of the Washington, D.C. Fire and EMS. Dennis, let's talk about your communication center. A couple years ago, that was broken away from the fire department, and they created a unified communication center for the District of Columbia. It's no surprise that in many communities, when the fire department loses control of the communication center, the needed fire flavor, the needed EMS flavor, can be lost. And there were certainly some stories on the news about that going on. What's going on in D.C. communications? And I know you have made some changes already.
Well, Fire Chief, you're exactly right. We have an Office of Unified Communications that I guess would be described as a civilian operation. And let me say for the record, they truly are the unsung heroes. In our system, we know that we're going to do about 160,000 calls a year, and that equates to about 1 million telephone calls just for the fire department. I know the police department's probably 4 times that, so their workload is absolutely tremendous, and they do an incredible job. Let me say that for the record and from the heart. We're really, really, really pleased with what they do. However, to embellish their operation and to make sure that the technical aspect doesn't get lost, if you will, on the civilian members, we have currently one EMS high-ranking supervisor, rank of lieutenant or above, and one fire officer, looks like it's going to be the rank of lieutenant, also, that are full-timers at the communication center. Probably by next budget, we're going to at least increase that to have a second EMS person immediately available and helping. Now, the EMS side, I would describe that as, if you will, air traffic control. Our EMS dispatchers, the ones that work for our fire and EMS agency, are constantly in contact with the hospitals, constantly watching drop times. If it sounds like a mass casualty incident, they're spooling up, moving one of the two mass casualty buses into the appropriate area and making sure that the right level of supervision occurs. And I would say the same thing for the fire lieutenant, air traffic control. And what I mean by that is, as an example, this morning a company called in and asked to have the water department start to an apartment house that had a flooded basement, and before we knew it, the special operations section chief, along with a couple of other specialty units that can move a lot of water from a basement, the apartment complex was evacuated. And I think all because if you will, shift officer at communications, I believe, caught what sounded to be pretty innocuous and not a big deal and turned it into a little bit bigger deal. Not that a water leak is a disaster, I guess, unless you're having it
unless it's your water leak, right?
Fire, yeah, and a true fire emergency. But we've just had the best luck with a blend of the civilian folks along with the fire operations folks.
That's great. You know, the so often, as you did mention, the folks who do our dispatching, they can be our strongest or weakest link, and it's all about the management of those personnel, the support of those personnel, and the training of those personnel especially. And by having a uniformed fire officer, a uniformed EMS officer in the communications center can only improve and really also help educate the communications folks who traditionally are so police-oriented or so police-influenced to understanding the fire and rescue world. And again, as you mentioned too, the call volume, the police are constant. They're constantly busy. Where fire and rescue slows down, gets busy, slows down, gets busy. It's a whole different world, and a lot of places try and mix that all into one. And one of the solutions
is probably questionable results, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the solutions is by putting that uniformed person in there, and that's a great idea. I just want to jump back to something we talked about earlier, and that was the family and the lawsuit over EMS. I understand that the family has held off on any lawsuit dependent upon whether the city makes significant changes in EMS. That's pretty neat. I mean, from the family standpoint, they're clearly not looking for money as they are to make sure this doesn't happen to somebody else. Is that true?
That's exactly right. Our mayor has put so much energy into this entire process, Mayor Finty, and I just don't think he's going to allow anything less than success to come out of this process. The bottom line is we're meeting on a monthly basis with what I would call a blue ribbon panel. Becky Denlinger, as you well know, from Cobb County, Georgia. We have the chief.
Top of the line. She's great.
She's amazing. We have the chief of EMS for the city of Boston, Richard Sereno, and about a dozen other folks that are prominent in the world of emergency medicine that are helping us through this process. It'll be a series of recommendations and then ultimately some sort of sustainability and follow-up so that we can benchmark where we were and where we're at. I think we've already seen a dramatic shift in response times, in our ability to treat a patient quicker, and the level of care and supervision. But, you know, the best is yet to come, as they say. I'm positive that's going to continue upward. And you're exactly right, though. The family has agreed that if we make substantive change, if we do improve the service, that they'll back off of what at least went into the books as a $40 million lawsuit, and it looked very bleak for the city.
Incredible. Talk about apparatus, specialty teams, Homeland Security, Special Operations. You mentioned just earlier that your Special Operations Command Chief was involved this morning in just detailing some units to solve some problems. Tell us about the Special Operations Unit of Washington, D.C. Fire Department.
You know, we're very blessed in that regard as well. I mentioned we went from 8 battalions down to 6. Well, reality of it is actually down to 7. The Special Operations Battalion operates out of one of our old fire stations, the old Engine 11 on Park Street, and pretty much takes care of the rescue squad operation and other specialty units such as the fireboat, the foam and dry chemical truck, and the like. There's a deputy fire chief that oversees that operation of special operations, if you will, and they meet on a regular basis. They look at quality control, quality assurance. There's probably not a day hardly that goes by that we don't respond to some type of an emergency in the metro system, our very elaborate underground subway process, and we're watching that very carefully, as well as we're very closely connected with the Metropolitan Police and, of course, federal police agencies through the Fusion Center. I know that we stood up our fire command operation throughout the whole weekend when the Glasgow bombings occurred. When you think about the buses, if you will, that were bombed in London, we must have 4 or 5 dozen at any given time on our streets with tourists, and they're absolutely chock full. So we watched very carefully and very closely and used the fusion center, used the intelligence from the fusion center, if you will, to make our best decisions. I'm proud to say there's perhaps about a dozen or 15 folks that have received secret clearance that are access that type of information,
right,
and use the very controlled type of information from the federal government. I myself am in the process of being reviewed by the Department of Homeland Security, get that clearance taken care of and be able to have that accessibility. Interestingly enough, the first alarm that I responded to was unfortunately a shooting situation at the White House.
Huh.
Just to give you some scope, if you will, of what goes on here. And there's probably not a day that we're not involved in a motorcade of the president or vice president, or a helicopter landing or taking off of the president, vice president, or head of state. So for us, the special operations are truly a mainstay. They're daily operations. And then, of course, we have events like the 4th of July celebration where 500,000 folks come to town and it becomes a type one event.
So much is going on in D.C., and that's why so many of us, I know at least myself, scratching my head over the years the way the department was treated, funded, and all that. And it's nice to see these changes going on, people realizing that maybe we ought to fund and support and allow this department to move forward the way it needs to. How many rescue squads do you have? And that's a heavy rescue company in D.C., right?
Yes, sir. We operate out of three. We, at one time, were up to four. We probably could use at least five, but currently we operate out of three heavy rescue squad units. Of course, they're staffed. I can remember in real lean times when I was here, it was split staff with an engine. Either you were in service, for instance, as Engine 15 or Rescue Squad 3, and we've lived past that. They're back to being staffed all the time. Each of the heavy squads have a support unit that provides additional, if you will, capability. And then we have a two-piece heavy up hazardous materials company that's assigned to Engine 12 on Rhode Island Avenue. So when you look at all the components, if you will, of the special operations unit, and the fireboat would fit into that, there are actually three fireboats, one large 6,000 gallon per minute capability, and then two smaller, if you will, rescue boats that can focus on different functions. It really is a formidable force of operations that comes out of our specialty units, if you will.
What would you like to see? Are you looking at anything like any squad companies such as engine pumper, rescue pumper companies, or any expansion like that you'd like to see happen?
Chief, I think what we've got to focus on when we get the customer service completely up and fine-tuned, I think the next challenge for us is to start looking at some relief companies within the battalions. In other words, you can assign Engine 10 to check smoke detectors or test fire hydrants, and I'm just happen to pick on them because
sure,
I'm so busy. And you know, not much is going to happen beside call after call after call. So what we've been working on, what the senior administration has been working on, is trying to build a configuration where there's at least one additional company assigned per battalion to begin providing that relief and also be able to provide the appropriate level of training. And we feel the same thing has got to happen for the medic units. We have some medic units that just truly go from call to call. They
Non-stop.
Never make it back to quarters. So we've got to begin building that capacity in next, which isn't going to be cheap. We're probably short a couple of truck companies throughout town, and then I think we'll get back to trying to focus on some of the specialty units to at least put that fourth rescue squad back in service. And we're talking years down the road, as you probably well
sure
know. In the meantime, we've got fire stations to go through complete overhauls and a few new fire stations to build and a few fire stations that have to be rebuilt. So we've got great plans, including an administration building at this point that looks like it's going to be blended into the quarters of Engine 13, Truck 10.
Excellent. Now, you talked about some physical changes. What are you doing as far as, or what are some of your goals as far as the training your personnel from recruit to chief officer? What changes would you like to see happen? And perhaps maybe the question would be, what changes have your troops told you they'd like to see happen?
Well, I think, again, it's a question of trying to provide some more resources. We've got a real elaborate back-to-basics course that we have so successfully conducted in the past that we're getting ready to kick off again, that focus on the simple, if you will, fire ground functions and operations. I would just urge all of the viewers not to get too far away, and to steal a phrase from both of our close friends, Joe Starnes from North Carolina, is you better be able to flawlessly execute the basics if you're going to do well in our business. We have developed, along with Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute, a program that deals directly with diversity that hopefully will help prevent the Rosenbaum and other situations relative to patient care and just being able to be equitable and appropriate no matter what type of service we provide, whether people are rich or poor, whether they have different lifestyles, whether they're of a different color or gender than you are, and that's going to be kicked off very, very soon. And, of course, we're always trying to take up or ratchet up the officer training program a notch. So we've got some great plans, and all we need now is the funding to be able to breathe life. I guess also, too, that's really exciting is we have one of the simulators that New York City purchased with the help of NASCAR. We have that exact same simulator.
Oh, the driving simulators. Yeah,
and
very cool.
Perfect. It's really, really going to be neat, and we're getting that up and running, if you will, effectively at this point.
Is the apparatus driver in D.C. a rank, or is it just assigned by the captain and lieutenant? How does that work?
Well, it's a tested process, and ultimately
okay.
The captain makes the final decision, but you have to go through a selection process to demonstrate that you can operate and function correctly in that role, whether it's driving or pumping or tillering. And then, of course, what's very, very important to us is to understand and to know the streets, the alleys, the splits, the fire department connections, and the entrances for medical calls of all the federal buildings. And then we end up calling that person a technician, and then they, of course, receive a pay boost.
Okay, so it's technician level. Cool. Well, since you've been in town, there's been some pretty serious fires.
You know, Billy, it's just amazing how busy of a system. We've had two third alarm fires in the same day, and they both happened to be at historic sites, and they caused millions upon millions of dollars of damage, probably in the order of about $50 million between the two. So that's been interesting. But we also have a steady diet, I would say, two or three working fires a day and perhaps a second alarm about every third or fourth day. I'm really pleased with the aggressiveness of our operation. And when I say that from a standpoint of putting a person's life in jeopardy, our lives in jeopardy, I think that's always balanced with a risk management model.
Sure.
But aggressiveness, you know, when you look at the temperature, when you look at the humidity, we've got a really serious working fire that's taken over three or four rooms and perhaps a floor or two. For us to go to a second alarm is pretty routine business nowadays.
Okay, so keeping the troops busy, lots going on there.
And our Friendship Fire Association, people tend to forget that, but we have one of the oldest volunteer fire components in the nation. And FFA, when it gets to be tremendous temperatures and high humidity, they go out on what we call a working fire dispatch. That's a box alarm with an extra engine truck chief and a couple of other support units. And, of course, at that point, the two rehab vehicles are dispatched. And for the most part, our FFA members get those vehicles out. They get their water, Gatorade, assist the customer. It'll also be part of the customer service component. So
they're regular. I mean, they're a volunteer part of the organization, Friendship Fire Association.
Yes.
And they've gone for much more than a coffee wagon. I've seen them operate. They got some great equipment too. Is that purchased by the D.C. Fire Department?
All brand new. Of course, we look for donations where we can get it, but the base, if you will, units come out of the city's budget, and they need to. We need to do that. They also at Friendship Fire have a tremendous museum. If you haven't visited, the entire third floor of Engine 3 on New Jersey Avenue has been turned into a monument, if you will, to this organization. So I'm very, very proud, and the last formal serving fire chief of the city of Atlanta, his badge is now on display there.
That's very cool. Dennis, one of the tough parts of your job was back in July 7th when firefighter James McCray III died at Washington Hospital Center of an apparent heart attack. He was on duty as the towman at Truck 12 in Tenleytown in D.C. Firefighter McCray woke up not feeling real well around 0300 that day, and the paramedics from Engine 20 started treating McCray for symptoms of a heart attack. He was taken to Sibley and then taken to Washington Hospital Center. I guess while he was in the helicopter being flown to WHC, he went into cardiac arrest. And he is the first firefighter to die in D.C. in the line of duty under your watch. And very sad that we read about firefighter McCray being 34 years old and leaving behind a 9-year-old daughter. You know, the issue of heart attacks and strokes in firefighters, it's 50%, and you and I go way back as co-patriots in trying to deal with the injury and death issue in our country of firefighters. And 50% of us die from heart and stroke is tough enough. We're working very hard nationally through the IAFC Safety, Health, and Survival Section, through the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, through the IFF, through the NVFC, and all organizations that I'm just not remembering to mention right now to try and deal with this problem. But yet, on the other side, we're getting poked and prodded by the Department of Justice and their continued attitude of ignoring, as far as I'm concerned, ignoring the fact that Congress passed the Hometown Heroes Act, which is basically designed to treat firefighters who've died in the line of duty firefighters who've died of heart attacks and strokes within the description of on duty as true line of duty death heroes, but yet they're withholding hundreds of payouts to the families because, from what I understand, DOJ just doesn't agree with what Congress passed. So basically, they're ignoring it. And what's the deal on that?
Chief, you're personally involved in it. Boy, I know you're passionate and do such an incredible job of firing people up and making them think and making them stop and making them realize sometimes the stupid stuff that we do through closecalls.com. Well, it's probably time to get you and everybody else and solicit your support to make sure that Congress does conduct an audit, does conduct an investigation into the Department of Justice. As I had a chance for 4 wonderful years to be the fire chief in the city of Atlanta, Russell Swantes, 39 years old, responds to an alarm for what turns out to be engine 24. That evening, he's actually driving yellow 8 or 9, I forget which unit, which is at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, and he succumbs at 39 to a heart attack, leaves behind 2 precious, glorious daughters. And of course, now, with James McCray's situation, he actually has a stepson that's 15, and Jamie Sarah, that you mentioned, is 10. At 34 years old, we've lost him. And, you know, those families deserve that public safety officer death benefit. James had gone to 3 runs, I forgot to mention. And both men meet all of the criteria set forth by PSOB that's in the law and will of Congress that's been signed by the president and funded by the Congress. And some jerk at the Department of Justice or some process at the Department of Justice is just simply putting those applications, I think it's now 199 of them. In
199 families of fallen public safety officers still waiting to hear, and 48 families have been turned down.
And only five or six, I forget the final number, have been approved.
Yep.
And that's unacceptable. I hope that the listeners take time to fax, or better yet, call their Congress members, their senators, their representatives, and just say that it's not acceptable. And, you know, this is one of those circumstances that's so frustrating in that there was not a single nay vote in either the House or the Senate. A few didn't get a chance to vote, and I think that's typical of any bill. But it had 0 opposition, Billy. Everybody voted for it. The president signed it. The next hurdle was to get it funded. It's been funded. Now the directions, if you will, of what causes and what creates a line of duty death, that's been prepared. But yet still, all of these families, and you know, like I say, I'm personally passionate about it because I have two families that are waiting for this money that their families deserve. And I know, you know, each time we graduate a recruit class, and the exact same thing goes for the volunteer members listening in, we raise our hand and we swear what we're going to do for our community, that we'll always be there, we'll never bow out no matter how tough it advocates, and, you know, we do that, and we do that well. And as the fire chief officers, we look back out at that same crowd and say, and whatever you need, if you end up in a situation, we're going to take care of your families. And it's just, it's maddening to realize that we can't get that accomplished because of some pinhead.
This reminds me of the fire chief that decides that all personnel will participate in training at every station every day, and a lieutenant six or seven levels below the rank of fire chief decides, nah, we're not going to do that. Well, you know what? That's great if that lieutenant doesn't want to do the training with their personnel, but it's not always up to the lieutenant. The lieutenant needs to follow orders and do the training. Well, I see it the same way. This is a individual, or perhaps, maybe it's Gonzalez who's snubbing his nose at Congress. Who knows these days? But someone below the rank of congressman, below the rank of senator, below the rank of president, has decided what the Congress, what the Senate, and what the president wants, they're not going to do. And to me, that's just incredible. It's not like this amount of money is going to break the United States. These are families of firefighters. See, I'm getting all stressed out over this now. So
well,
I
and I don't
want
to stress you out, but we've broken our promise, Billy. Got
it's ridiculous.
Like me and you that look in the eyes of the folks, whether they're volunteer, whether they're career combination, whether they're EMS, whether they're fire. And you know, the same thing goes for our brothers in blue, all
absolutely.
The police officers, brothers and sisters, I should say. And, you know, we've broken that promise not because we haven't made sure there's a Hometown Heroes Act. Check that one off. Of course, Ron Sarnicky, Hal Bruno, what an incredible job they've done. We've got the bill signed by the president. Check that one off. We got it funded. Check that one off. We got the guidance as to how it should be implemented. Check that one off. But yet, we still are in pending mode. Unbelievable.
So, and what makes me then wonder, to flip-flop this, is if the president wanted it done, it would probably be done. So we've got to wonder what's going on there. Somewhere the system is broken down. These families are sitting back doing nothing, getting nothing, after their loved ones gave their lives in the line of duty in our business. And hopefully,
I know our huge supporter and tremendous friend, we are the sleeping giant, Kurt Weldon would say.
Sure.
And, you know, he tried to wake us up, and I know he's no longer in Congress, but somebody's got to give us that wake-up call. Somebody's got to make sure, and maybe you're right, maybe not only should your listeners call their congressmen and senators, maybe they ought to fax to the White House as well. I doubt they're going to be able to get George on the phone, but if they rattle enough cages, I'm with you. I think something positive will happen for our organizations.
It's got to come out. Yeah. Well, look, we're talking with Fire Chief Dennis Rubin, Chief of the Washington, D.C. Fire and EMS. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Great information provided to our listeners. I know they're going to get a big kick out of listening to this. And your own members, hopefully, are listening, and it'll give them an opportunity to further learn. I'm sure knowing you, though, they're all pretty well aware of what your goals and objectives are for the organization, as well as whatever input they want. But again, Dennis, thank you. Any final word to our listeners?
Just truly appreciate Firehouse.com. It's become a tremendous source of information. I know on a regular basis there are reporters in our city and always following up on stories, and Susie and Pete Matthews and the many other folks. So let me just say, because I'm sure you guys probably don't hear it enough, what a great service all of you. Billy, your show has certainly lit up the scoreboard. I know you know that, but it's vital information. So thanks again to you and all your staff for what you do, sir.
We'll look forward to seeing you next week in Baltimore at Firehouse Expo. I know you're involved with some programs there. And for those listening, those interested in participating in a live broadcast of Through the Smoke, we'll be doing that at the Convention Center on Thursday at 2 p.m., 1400 hours, room 308. And one of my guests will be Dr. Dennis O'Neill from the National Fire Academy. So again, consider joining us for that. We're also doing a seminar Friday morning at 8:30, of which two of my guests in that seminar, one will be a paramedic who was struck at 70 miles an hour on the highway and has lived to tell her story, and also a tower ladder operator who overturned his apparatus responding to a call. So check it out. We'll look forward to seeing many of you in Baltimore next week at the Firehouse Expo. Again, Dennis, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, brother.
And we'll see the rest of you next time on either Through the Smoke or more. We'll see you wandering the streets of Baltimore or at the convention center. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. The show is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. And this show, again, has been brought to you by Dennis Smith's First Responder Financial.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio at firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.